How will I find you if I have information to share? I ask. Ruyi will show you how to reach me. She waves her hand, dismissing me. Ruyi approaches me again and gestures for me to follow. A woman of few words. She leads me to a gate on the other side of the garden. Another stone tunnel, but considerably shorter than the previous one. We emerge in a back corridor, and I recognize from the white walls that we are behind the palace library. There is a shaded path, stone pebbles forming a walkway for scholars to shed their shoes and walk upon for mental clarity and acuity, following the patterns of the gods. Stone lions border the path, wearing the same fierce snarl as the one previous. Count two from the southern end, Ruyi says, pointing at the lion in question. She gives me an embroidered pendant made of yellow string, a similar design to my mother's mourning knot. Easy to spot from a distance. Tie this to its paw before the first gong of the evening. I will meet you here at the hour of the thief. If the princess needs to speak with you, I will put the same pendant on the lion in front of your courtyard. Meet me at the same time. Ruyi bows to me then, touching her hand to her shoulder. Good hunting, Ning of Su. With barely a rustle, she departs into the shadows, leaving me to find my way back to the residences alone. Chapter 20. I fall asleep sometime after the fourth gong, after realizing that Kong is not going to appear tonight. I suppose that makes me already a failure at spy work, but I am thankful for this reprieve. My nerves are frayed after my meeting with the princess, and I am not sure I can manage the pretense it would require to face him tonight. In the morning, Lian and I tuck into a breakfast of fluffy baozi, fresh from the bamboo steamers of Small Wu's kitchen. We pull the dough apart to reveal the filling within, ground pork mixed with chopped chives and drizzled with sesame oil, and blow to cool the steaming insides. I should be grateful to even be here, but the unease continues to crawl up the back of my throat until I lose my appetite. I wonder how long the princess hopes to keep up her lie about the emperor's health, how furious the people will be if they realize they have been deceived. The many facets of her mask I have glimpsed, on the stage, through Kong's eyes, and witnessed firsthand, the look of someone slowly being forced to the edge. Ning? Lian waves her hand in front of my face. You've been so quiet. I turn back to her, take a large bite out of the bun, and almost choke. I'm only worried about the next round. I'll need to get better at lying, and fast, or else all my secrets will unravel around me. She nods. Understandable. It will only get harder from here, especially if we need 2 days to prepare for this next challenge. Lian tries to offer a distraction by regaling me with stories of last night's banquet. How she had to sit next to some of the lower officials, who have a penchant for talking too much when the wine flows freely. How everyone was abuzz with speculation about whether the emperor would grace them with his presence, even a glimpse. But he did not appear. How did the banished prince manage to find out about the emperor's death, even while the princess has been able to keep it from the court? The rumors worm their way back into my thoughts again. How his spies have ears and eyes everywhere, snatching children to become residents of his dark kingdom. Can you tell me more about the princess? I ask. If I can use Lian as a resource, perhaps she can help me navigate all I have seen in the past few days. When I used to spend the winters here, all the children spent time together, she says. Jin was serious. Quiet, focused on her studies. Not surprising, considering her grandmother was a dowager empress, she grimaces. I nod, remembering my own grandmother, who ruled over the Wu household with an iron fist. Only grandfather could get her to calm if someone managed to anger her. We used to call her Hu Gu Po, Lian chuckles at the memory. Grandmother Tiger, the legendary tigress who roams the forest, who has a taste for evil men and likes to clean her teeth with her bones. Myths reflected in life. Hu Gupo was the scariest thing to roam these halls, she goes on. And all her attention was on Jin to make sure she lived up to the Li name. She had lessons from the moment she woke up and late into the night. That sounds lonely, Lian nods. If your closest companion is someone who your grandmother picked to be your shadow from a young age, it's not a life I would want to live. You mean her bodyguard? Ruyi. The girl who launched herself into the air with a single jump, like a bird taking flight, defending the life of the princess. Her family has served the royal family for generations, and when the Dowager Empress married the Ascended Emperor, she was permitted to bring some of her own people with her. Ruyi was one of them. She was trained in a secret fighting art that is passed down only to those in her family. One born to rule, one born to serve. I suppose it is easy to ensure a person's loyalty if the lives of their entire family depend on it, I mumble. Or they could care for them, Lian says, unaware of the turmoil in my mind, countering my bitterness. From what I remember, Jin was always kind to Ruyi. She was kind to everyone, actually. Never behaved like I thought a princess should. I remember the chill in her gaze, the casual threat of her words. Something happened to that kind girl Lian remembers in the years since. Mingwen walks in and bows. Her demeanor has been warmer to us since our encounter in the kitchens. She has taken over the care of our residence as the senior maidservant, and even though we are no longer permitted to associate with the rest of the kitchen staff, it is still nice to see a familiar face. Competitors, your presence has been requested by the judges in the Hall of Reflection. So soon? Lian downs her cup of tea with a hurried slurp, and I regret not eating more to settle my stomach. If I am sick in front of the judges, it will simply add another mark to my already long list of misdeeds. The few of us who remain file into the Hall of Reflection, a small indoor pavilion located in the scholars' gardens surrounding the library. The floors are a pale white marble, swirls and patterns like clouds contained within. The walls are a gleaming blue-black stone, shiny enough to show our reflections when we stand before them. Above our heads, the roof ascends in a dizzying pattern. At first, it appears to be a spiral leading upward. Peering closer, I realize it is an illusion. Instead, tablets are inset into the shelves, carved with names, memorials to the dead. Melodic trills fill the air, redirecting my attention. There are golden cages positioned on stands, each containing a single bird, talking to each other in a series of calls and song. They are a beautiful addition to the room, living adornments for an emperor to admire. The coexistence of life and death. Elder Guo stands among them, regarding us with a stern expression. Even with her plain gray robes devoid of any adornment, she exudes a serene confidence. Welcome to those who remain, as a testament to Shen Nong's legacy, she raises her arms in greeting. The scholars and the monks commit their lives to the study of pursuits worthy of the respective gods they honor. Just like Han Xia is dedicated to the blue carp, Wu Ling is devoted to the black tiger, renowned for its study of martial arts and military techniques. Ye Liu Academy is where one would attend for the study of philosophy and history. The Shen Nong Tu who spoke up for me against Shao, the one named Wen Yi, wears a pendant that shows he is pledged to the Emerald Tortoise of Ye Liu, I've noticed. Only the Lady of the South has no monastery or academy. She is found in the trees and fields. At Hanxia, we are dedicated to the service of Shen Nong. We study his teachings, all he has passed on regarding agriculture and animal husbandry, and of course, the art of tea. What I know of Hanxia is that it is located west of the Jade River, on the border of the mountain range that separates Yun and Anhe, overlooking the most fertile valley of Daxi. Mother always mentioned the name with reverence. The most renowned Shenongshi have passed through those hallowed halls, where she obtained her rank. The rarest of tea leaves are grown at that elevation, some of which have been tasted only by the royal family and the court officials. Elder Guo's expression turned somber. By now, you must have all heard about the rot that is attempting to infiltrate the empire through poisoned tea bricks. Treacherous attempts to undermine the rule of the great emperor. A rush fills my ears. The tea responsible for my mother's death. So far, we have been told nothing about its origins, about who may be behind the poisonings. The governor and his people have many excuses, offering only a promise that the threat has been contained. Your third challenge honors the virtue of wisdom. You will continue to the next round in pairs, she states. Choose your partner. I'm surprised she would permit us to form our own alliances. Lian and I step closer to one another without hesitation. The others do the same, having already formed their own bonds. We will... Elder Guo's eyes narrow as her words break off. The floor beneath our feet begins to shake. Her head swivels to the door. In the distance, there is the sound of drums. Winyi is the one who jumps forward first, throwing the windows open, revealing the courtyard below. Rows of soldiers march in time, sending tremors throughout the grounds of the palace. The air is suddenly filled with the sound of beating wings, the caged birds attempting to take flight, sensing danger. Someone wails, the words ringing clearly across the rooftops, bringing everyone to their knees.
The Emperor has ascended! Long will he be remembered! The Emperor has ascended! Long will he be remembered!
Chapter 21. We are escorted out of the Hall of Reflection, directed to return to our residences. But we quickly enter into chaos, the gardens teeming with soldiers. I'm separated from the other competitors, trying to get my bearings, but I'm refused entry to a gate that appears familiar. Then I'm funneled down another corridor until I'm lost again. I'm gripped by the same panic as in the market, the drums beating a frantic beat in the distance, causing my own heartbeat to quicken.
Clear a path!
Soldiers bark at a cluster of servants, many of whom are weeping. My head turns and I see another group of people dressed in the finery of nobles, but one seems to have collapsed into a faint. I follow another group of servants hurrying past, hoping they will lead me back to the servants' wing where I belong. But someone bumps into me, then I'm grabbed by an arm clasped in armor, pulling me in another direction.
Wait!
I protest.
You've got the wrong person!
The soldier who has a hold of me stops and bends down toward me, lifting his helmet up slightly to unveil the face beneath.
Kung!
I half gasp, then, realizing my mistake in uttering that name in the open, I speak quickly, hoping no one else overheard.
You didn't come last night.
But I immediately regret those words. It sounds like too much wanting, too much of myself revealed. I wasn't sure if you wanted to see me again, he says. I catch a glimpse of a smile before it is once again hidden beneath the helmet. Before I can say anything else, another shadow looms over us. A soldier with jutting wings of gold rising from his black helmet. The fine designs of his shoulders and the etchings of the grimacing demon on his chest plate indicate someone of a high rank. I freeze, certain he has seen through Kong's disguise.
Servants are to return to their residences, he barks. Upon order of the Chancellor.
Acknowledged, Marshal.
Kong quickly clasps his hands into a salute and his hand returns to my elbow.
Let's go.
We hurry together as fast as we can, my steps keeping time with his, until we are through the gardens and past another moon gate. We have returned to the Scholar's Garden, next to the black spire of the Library Pagoda. Down this way. He gestures and we turn the corner onto the Path of Contemplation. With a jolt, I recognize the stone lions, the black and white pebbles. The instructions of the princess loom before me. Discover what he has planned.
I suddenly feel like I'm wandering through a maze of brambles, every turn a threat. When he is certain there is no one to overhear us, Kong pulls off his helmet. When I heard that the news about the Emperor had been released, I knew it meant the window for her to make a choice about me was swiftly closing, he says, too close and too earnest. Ever so casual for a man who is speaking about his possible execution. But I don't want to be remembered by you as a man who does not keep his word. I'll see you again. A promise as soft as petals falling. What do you think she will decide? I ask. To lift the exile, or... I cannot even say it. He inclines his head. At least I will die having fought for my people. It reminded me of his sincerity when he said he would ask for leniency. Not for himself, but for everyone back home. Silver Needle has already told me the truth. If what I can find from him can ease the princess's suspicions, perhaps his life will be spared. Do you know a way out of the palace? I ask. There is a flurry of footsteps on the other side of the wall, and he pulls me into another alcove, this one housing a small bamboo grove and a wooden carving of flowers. Why do you ask? To spend more time with you? To find out more of your secrets? To save you or expose you? I know I need to choose the rest of my words carefully. Our paths run parallel in a way. Soon you will face the judgment of the princess, and my future will be decided in the next round of the competition. My finger runs over the smoothness of the bamboo, marveling at how nature still grows here, stifled in this small plot of dirt and limited circle of sky. But you mentioned our day in Jia, and I'm reminded how happy I was that day as well, freer than I've ever felt before. I wonder if we can return to that, even for an hour. At first, I'm hesitantly grasping at those fragile connections. But as I continue to speak, the words begin to grow stronger. I can taste the sweetness of pear candy on my tongue, igniting other memories. The warmth of the golden key as we touched, how we sank into one another, a closeness that I both feared and craved. Maybe I drew on the magic, pulling him to me, but the magic draws on me in turn, binding me closer to him. And if you could go into the city, where would you go? He asks. I heard there are shops selling teacups carved from bone or ivory, foods from the north that I've never seen before. All these things I have yet to experience. But if I fail the competition, I will have to return home and give up all my dreams of becoming a Shennongshi. I do not have the coin to complete the training and attend the exams. And of course, I will lose Shu if I fail this quest. The quaver in my voice is embarrassingly real. Mother said there is power in words, in hopes we breathe into being. It dangles there before me, a dream once as far out of reach as the stars in the sky, my longing for a different life. A life that Mother had and then lost. She found her contentment later, but I still yearn for it. Before, it may have been possible, he says, but now my face is known to all the city guards. I cannot travel in this disguise as easily, and I do not think I would be able to walk freely in the market without the helmet. It was a foolish thought. I shrug in an attempt to hide how much I care. But I do care, much more than I thought I would. A small part of me believed perhaps a Shennongshu would take interest in me during the competition, take me on as an apprentice based on my potential. But after the way I fumbled during the first round, I doubt anyone would want me now. With the competition now closed to the public, there is no other chance. If I don't win, I won't be able to save Shu. Unless I get the promised help from the princess in return for my spying, the cure-all stone for my sister, and enough coin to take care of my family. My mother told me of private gardens cultivated by scholar families, or even Jia's public gardens, where anyone may walk and admire the blooms. I say, grasping at any other possibility for us to spend time alone, uninterrupted. Sometimes I feel suffocated by this place, where everyone is always watching, waiting for you to make a mistake. My voice trails off. I understand, he says softly. It's a place where you're not always sure if people wish you harm or mean well. That is one thing I did not expect to find in Luzhou, where people say what they mean and mean what they say. I would like to hear more about Luzhou, I say, if you are willing to tell me. The walls shake again as more soldiers march past. He grabs my hand suddenly, pulling me close. I look up at him, feeling a flash of mortification. Does he think I'm hopeful for a tryst? Is that the price I'll have to pay to fulfill my task? I thought of another place I can take you to, he whispers. Somewhere I won't be recognized. If you will trust me. He brings my hand up, opening our fingers to touch, and presses his palm to mine. Trust. I feel the sharp stab of embarrassment in my gut. It is only me dreaming of flirtations. I nod, not trusting my voice not to betray me. He gives me the same lightning-quick grin that still makes my pulse stutter. I hope the connection between us does not pull too tight, and he remains oblivious to the thoughts still warring inside my traitorous mind. I follow Kong as he checks to make sure there are no soldiers nearby, and we scurry to another alcove. This one contains a plum tree, white petals scattered on the stones below. Another stone lion, paws raised, waits at the base. He pulls at an iron ring on the wall, and the mechanism slides open to reveal a hidden tunnel, just like the one Ruyi led me through when she took me to speak with the princess. How many other tunnels run through this place? Stay close, he whispers to me when we are safely behind the door. The tunnel gets tight in places, and sometimes we will pass right by the guards. I follow close behind, mindful of his warning. We're able to walk comfortably side by side to start, but eventually have to walk one after another. After a time, the tunnel gradually begins to widen again before we emerge into a small chamber. There is a large iron brazier in the center, lit and emanating warmth. The light from the fire bounces off the plaques on the wall, making the inscriptions shine. There is no dust on the floor, no signs of insects or animals. It is obvious this room is well cared for. A bell rings somewhere above our heads. The sound of it is so close it reverberates through my entire body. But the tone of it is familiar. It signifies the changing of the day from morning to afternoon to the evening. We're close to the bell tower, I exclaim. The tower is located at the southwest corner of the palace, and its sound can be heard from any corner of Jia. We are right underneath it, Kung explains, pulling an unlit torch from a stack in the corner. He uses the flames of the brazier to light it. When the ascended emperor built the palace, he ordered these tunnels to be constructed, connecting the palace to various points in Jia as escape routes in case of attack. I spent a lot of my childhood memorizing these tunnels to hide from my tutors or my trainers. He looks into the dancing light of the brazier, the fire reflected in his eyes. One of the tunnels leads to the northern docks, another to the tea house district. That was built at grandmother's request, so she could attend the performances without having to take an entourage of guards. Grandmother, Dowager Empress Wu Yang. It's strange to think about the fabled rulers of Daxi's history as people with families. That Kang can know them as well as I know Shu and my father. The thought is disconcerting. We should keep moving, he tells me. We head into one of the tunnels, and as we walk, I can feel the gradual slope of the ground beneath my feet. The air grows damper, like we are headed into the bowels of the earth. It's a peculiar feeling coming back here, he murmurs when we reach a split in the path. He lifts up his torch to look in either direction. How long ago did you leave the palace? I ask, hopeful that being in a place of his childhood will make him more susceptible to my questions. When I was 9, he says. It's been 10 years now. Everything is familiar, and yet... I wait for him to finish his thought, but he does not continue. I don't know how it feels to be expelled from a childhood home, to bear the physical brand of a traitor. But I do know what it feels like to be an outcast. I place a hand on his arm and he glances down at it in surprise, almost as if he forgot I was here for a moment. I remember now. He gives me a smile. We're almost there. Chapter 22. We do not advance far down the tunnel before we come to a wooden door, barred with a heavy beam on this side. It takes both of us to open it, covering our faces with our sleeves so we do not inhale the dust that fills the air around us. It's obvious the door has not been opened for quite some time. We ascend the steps, keeping low and quiet, cautious that we may be emerging into an occupied space. The first thing I notice is the smell of incense, rich and cloying, as the rest of the room comes into view. The chamber has five walls, each holding a carved stone panel. I approach each with reverence, recognizing that they are depictions of the gods. The Lady of the South has rippling robes and a flute in hand, her slippered feet on the back of a bird with great wings. Another panel features the Archer King, astride a great horse rearing, its massive hooves grazing the sky. Shen Nong is portrayed with a flowing beard, floating on a lily pad, flower in hand, while his reflection in the water shows a giant carp with matching long whiskers. Next to him is a man with bulging eyes and a ferocious fanged grin, holding a drum in his hand. Lightning streaks the sky behind him, reflecting off the mirror held by the woman at his side. The Thunder Tiger God, clad in his usual black, and the Lightning Goddess, his wife. The panel closest to the door features the Emerald Tortoise. All of them are stories familiar to any of Daxi's children. Above us soars a painted ceiling of the constellations, drawn in silver lines on a background of deep blue. Two figures fly across the sky, a dragon and a serpent entwined in eternal battle. Somewhere in the distance, there's the sound of chanting. What is this place? I ask softly. Lingya Monastery, the tomb of the former emperors, Kang tells me. They have one of the most beautiful gardens in all Jia. Gardens? My heart leaps at the thought, even as my mind tells me I should maintain the ruse, that I shouldn't care so much. And yet, I miss strolling through the orchards and plucking fruit from the trees. I miss the work of harvesting the leaves from the tea trees. I miss the flowers, even though I dislike their prickly nature and the challenges of coaxing out full blooms. The palace gardens, though beautiful, are always under watch, and I've never been permitted to linger. They are currently performing the midday chant, he explains. After they complete the session, they usually go to the dining hall. With the news of the emperor's passing, however, many of them will be called to the palace to assist. We should be able to go into the gardens and not be noticed, but we'll have to remain here until then. I'm drawn back to the portraits again. This time I notice the shimmering iridescence of the details inset into the stone. The beak of the bird, the mirror of the lightning goddess, the scales of Shen Nong's carp. These are beautiful. Even though I want to touch them, I know they should be preserved. They must be quite old. Those were made by my mother's people, with stones taken from the cliffs of the Emerald Isles, he says with a hint of sadness to his voice. They were part of the Dowager Empress's dowry when she married the Ascended Emperor. Li Zhou and Yun were in alliance once. I say without thinking, but isn't that where... I glance at him and notice the pain evident on his face, but it's too late to stop my brash words. Yes, a land where degenerates and bandits live in exile. But once it used to be a place known for carvings like these, where artisans lived in collectives and created marvelous things. He brushes his fingertips reverently over the scales of the carp. They were renowned for their work with the black pearls, which were used as jewelry or in headdresses and other adornments. The oyster's shells themselves were also used as inserts in carvings and sculptures. The pearls can also be ground into powder for medicinal use, to be ingested for vigor in battle or used in cosmetics to preserve youthfulness. The soil is enriched there, and it's difficult to farm. We found other ways to live on that harsh peninsula of rock until... Kong's lips pull thin as his expression darkens. Until the Emperor decided to make an example of my father and anyone associated with him. He banned the sale of the pearls and made the salt farms and the stone quarries the only industries on the islands. Then he sent all those who opposed him there to die. How did they survive after all that? I ask, feeling a rush of sympathy for all the innocents who have been affected by the Emperor's wrath. Those who were physically able joined the army, while their families starved, waiting for whatever meager wages they were able to send back. Some uprooted their lives and started anew elsewhere. Those who couldn't took up arms and attacked the imperial ships transporting goods to our northern neighbors. It is an awful sort of existence, watching everyone around you suffer. It is a familiar story. Su was not without years when the harvest was slim due to pestilence or drought. When I accompanied my father to yet another house filled with the sounds of crying children, their cheeks hollowed out. I'm not saying the bandits are justified, Kong says quickly, misreading my silence for disgust. But so many depended on the pearls. When their value fell, so did the hopes of... You don't have to explain to me why. I shake my head, assuring him of my sympathies. I understand. There were times in our village when the crops failed, but we were still taxed the same every season, even double if payments were so much as a week late. We all know of one or two people who retreated to the mountains to become bandits so they wouldn't be a burden on their families. No leniency when half a family was wiped out from poison. No reprieve from the demand for tribute offerings even while we buried our dead. My father continues to petition the governor for a season's reprieve, but mercy isn't a word in the man's vocabulary. I cannot help but tremble at the memory of seeing a man beaten in the market as punishment for his overdue taxes. Father and I had helped him bury his wife not even a month earlier, and his son a week before that. It is Kong who places his hand on my arm this time, offering warmth and reassurance. It sounds like we grew up with the same injustices, he says gently. This is why I noticed you in the market. When you helped the boy in trouble, it answered a few questions I was struggling with. I looked up at him, puzzled. What questions? His gaze searches my face as if he is still looking for answers there. Ning, I... The sweet sound of chimes echoes in the chamber, disrupting the intimacy between us. That's the end of the midday chant, he murmurs, but he does not move. We should go, I tell him, even though a part of me imagines closing the distance between us and laying my head on his chest, offering him the same kind of comfort. Instead, I turn and cross the room, forcing myself to clear my head. I need to get the information the princess is looking for, but I cannot grow to care for him in the meantime. I cannot have someone else I feel an obligation to, or else how could I betray him if I needed to? How can I give another part of myself to someone else when I already have so little to give? We sneak through empty corridors until we step outside onto a landing, and the lush sight of the gardens spreads out before me, almost too much to take in. The just-opened buds I left behind in Su have now erupted fully, some trees already flowering. Dragonflies buzz overhead while other insects drone drowsily in the bushes. In the distance, the forest canopy sways to the breeze. But before the dense grove, there are rows and rows of shrubs, waves of undulating green, dotted with blooms. After descending the steps, we walk upon a covered pathway that winds from the monastery to the gardens, lined with brick. Above our heads, Red pillars hold up the intricately painted roof. A mural of birds flies overhead in dazzling rainbow hues. This was my grandfather's present to my grandmother when she accepted his offer of marriage, Kong tells me as we stroll under the birds, the beauty of our surroundings having uplifted our moods for the moment. The mountains of Yun are famous for the rare birds, and she missed them, so he commissioned this to be built and tended to by the monks. It's as if they could come to life. I marvel at the vibrancy of the colors. They must be retouched every year to retain such hues. But I am not one for covered paths. I need to be among the plants, soaking the sunlight into my skin. I step off the walkway at the next corner and into the field of flowers, surrounding myself with peonies of all colors. I take a deep breath and inhale their scent, and underneath, the smell of the earth. I don't know if all Shennongshi have this natural affinity with plants, or if it's something unique to my mother's abilities. But it is here where I am certain some part of the old gods remains with us still. I open my eyes to see Kong still watching me from the path, an odd expression on his face. I feel like I am finally able to breathe. I call out to him, unable to contain the joy I feel at being among the growing things, no longer closed off by stone walls. Cautiously, he takes one step off the path and then hesitantly walks through the flowers, as if he is afraid he will hurt them. They're not as fragile as you think. I tease him by grabbing hold of a stalk and shaking the bloom in his direction, making him wince. They bend, but they don't yield easily. You can raise plants to the ground, burn them, but some will always return the next year and the year after that. I remember how much I cried when the orchards and the gardens burned, like I could feel the trees dying, and how Shu was at my side even when I was sniffling in my bed at night. She would whisper what Mother told us, that they would come back, and it was easier to believe the words when they came from my sister's lips. I clear my throat, trying to channel my father's stoicism instead. Sometimes you have to break off the branches and remove the diseased limbs in order for the plant to be healthy again. Not so different from breaking bones to set them, or cutting a swollen limb to run an infection dry. I believe you, he says with a laugh, seemingly amused at my rambling. You too! Shouts in the distance interrupt our moment, and we look toward the monastery to see two monks hurrying toward us. We've been caught. I look toward Kong, mouth agape, but he quickly reacts. His hand finds mine and he pulls me after him as he yells over his shoulder, Run! Chapter 23 We crash through the flower sea, the branches parting for us as we rush by. The flowers bow their heads and whisper, Hurry, hurry! We burst through the shrubs onto a grassy slope. The sharp-eyed monks have called for reinforcements and they split in their pursuit, hoping to surround us and box us in. Before us, a canal runs past a grove of trees, leading to a lake dotted with lotus pads. A half-moon bridge curves over the water running through the canal. We fly over the bridge, ducking under the willow branches. They leave itchy remnants behind in my hair. The path curves here, around a small man-made mountain carved out of yellow rock. I expect Kong to lead us over the path and into the other grove of trees, where it would be easier for us to circle around and lose our pursuers, but instead he races for the rocks. Wait, I say as he begins to climb over the side of the decorative mountain. Trust me, he says, quirking the corner of his mouth upward, eyes sparkling as bright as the waters behind him. I look over my shoulder and the monks are not visible any longer, but I'm certain they're not far behind. I can't risk getting caught with Kong outside the palace. I have to follow. Instead of climbing upward, he skirts around the base of the rock, balanced on the narrow overhang. There is a sharp drop into the murky water below. We only have room to crouch side by side, maneuvering ourselves into a small cave at the side of the mountain. except we are still visible to anyone who walks farther down the path and closer to the pond. I turn to Kong to see what we are supposed to do, but he tucks himself between two protrusions of rock and then disappears. I hear the voices of those searching for us fast approaching, and there's no time to think. I'm on my hands and knees, scrambling after him, diving into the crevice in the rocks. My hands search for places to grip as the sun-warmed rock turns damp and slippery. Without much illumination in the cramped space, I fumble for sure footing, muddying my skirts in the process. The narrow opening widens as my eyes adjust to the darkness, and I can make out steps carved into the stone. I squeeze myself between the two boulders after Kong, continuing to descend until we emerge in an underground cavern. Looking up, I see a crack across the top of the cavern, a separation between the rocks that must have been moved here on top of the space to hide what is contained below. A swath of sunlight cuts across the space, and it dances across the surface of the pool at the bottom of the cavern. The waters glow with a blue-green hue, like an impossible mirage.
"What is this place?"
I whisper to Kong when we carefully make our way around the pool on a slim ledge, barely wide enough for me to place my feet side by side. "It's an underground spring," he responds. "I spent a lot of time here after grandmother died. The abbess at the time was willing to take care of me whenever things got tumultuous in the palace." Tumultuous, an interesting word choice. "When I was smaller, it used to be a lot easier to make it through those rocks," he chuckles. But there's a nervous quality about his amusement, like this place has stirred up something within his depths. "We have to climb over this boulder, and there's a beach on the other side. We can wait there until the monks give up." Kong pats the stone in front of him. I look at the smooth surface, unsure. This is different from climbing onto a roof, where there are clear places I can put my hands and feet. "Did you know these are sacred waters?" Kong tells me with a grin, as if he senses my nervousness. "When the first emperor fought in the Battle of Red Rain, it was said the warlord Guangyong chased him into the caves but did not pursue because his clan believed these caverns to be haunted. When the first emperor and his men walked out of the caves, Guangyong and his followers laid down their swords because their enemies had faced the spirits hidden in the caves and had come out victorious. His people knew no fish could live in these waters and no insects could thrive here. But the first emperor drank from the pond and tasted only sweetness. He then triumphed over the southern clans with assistance from Guangyong. Years later, the ascended emperor started construction on the capital, but when they wanted to build in this area, the earth collapsed. They found the underground spring and the cave system. When the ascended emperor heard that this had happened, he came to visit the site, and he saw a giant carp swimming in these waters. But when the ascended emperor's men jumped into the spring to find it, they could find no sign of the creature. It was said then that this place was blessed by Shen Nong, and Ling Ya was built to preserve this site." I've never heard of that story. I'm enthralled by the idea of standing in a place once visited by the gods. I peer down at the water to see if there's any magic hidden in its depths, but I see only stillness.
"You can try the water for yourself," he says, teasing. "See if it tastes like the legend says."
I raise my eyebrow.
"I'm guessing you sampled the sacred waters many times as a boy?"
He laughs, putting his hand to his chest in mock affront.
"Your words draw blood. Will you shame me in front of the gods?"
"Show me the way before we are struck down for our disrespect." I can't help but chuckle. Kong quickly scales the side of the boulder without hesitation. He moves unencumbered by his armor, like someone who has worn it all his life.
"There's not enough room up here for both of us," he calls out from the top. "I'll wait for you on the other side."
I acknowledge him while my hands run over the stone, searching for finger holds. I find dips and cracks, use my toes to find leverage, then pull myself up
discovering imperfections in the rock to hook onto in the process.
I'm slower and more careful than Kung, but it doesn't take long before I pull myself over the top and onto the ledge above. It's even more beautiful up here. On a stretch of pebbled beach down below, Kung looks up at me with a grin, handsome and tousled and wild, until his expression changes.
Ning, he tells me, quiet and fearful. Beside you...
What?
I swallow whatever I was about to say and follow his gaze to my left.
A green and yellow snake lifts its head at me, hissing. Its small black eyes are focused on me, a threat. Moving slowly, I get onto my hands and knees, sliding my foot back until I can find a place to hold my weight.
I'm not going to harm you, I tell it, keeping my voice low. I'm just going to...
The snake darts forward, snapping at my arm, and I snatch my hand back, out of reach of its fangs. But the movement throws me too far in the other direction, and my foot slips. I fall backward into emptiness. The last thing I see is Kong's shocked face, his hand reaching out for me. Then I break the surface of the blessed waters and sink into their cold depths.
Chapter 24. The water quickly soaks into my sleeves and my skirts, weighing them down. I struggle to take a breath, and the water rushes into my nose and open mouth, choking me. By the time I regain my senses enough to move my arms and kick my legs, I'm already hopelessly tangled in fabric. Fire ignites in my chest, even as the cold grips my limbs and seeps into my bones. Pain like nothing I have ever felt burns through me. The water is sweet on my lips and tongue as it drowns me, the lightest sense of bubbles on the back of the throat. So, I think, on the verge of hysterics, the legend of the first emperor is true. Bursts of light pop before me, one after another. A sea of stars streaming through the night sky. The current calling me into the promise of warmth, into letting go. But then I see Shu's face through the dark, the way she said to me, I believe in you, and I know I cannot let the water take me. Something grabs onto my arms through the warmth. I fight against the pleasant stream, allowing the pull to carry me away. We ascend, leaving the stars behind us, until I am thrown onto my back, the world in smears of color above me. My vision wavers, clears, and a face emerges. I think I hear my name. Rough hands grab my shoulders and roll me onto my side. Forceful strikes hit my back. I expel water onto the ground, suddenly able to breathe again, taking in great big gasps of air. I struggle to push myself up with one elbow, and a garment settles around my body. I didn't know how much I wanted the warmth until it's there, and my teeth chatter against one another. I sit up with his help, still sputtering. Are you all right? Kong hovers, attentive. Something flickers inside me like tinder struggling to light.
You saved my life!
I manage to gasp out, my throat still hoarse from coughing.
I waited, he says apologetically. I waited and waited for you to surface. Then when you didn't, I thought I went in too late.
I don't know how to swim, I admit, drawing the garment tighter around me. Then I realize what I'm wearing. His outer tunic. Pieces of his armor are scattered around us. Chest plate, helmet, leg pieces. Tossed aside in his haste to jump in after me. I start to shake, remembering the pull of that current. How if it wasn't for Shu, my bond with my sister still waiting for me back home, it would have been so easy to give in. Strands of hair slide down in front of my eyes, making it difficult to see. I try to swipe them away, but my hands continue to tremble. I'm sorry, he says. He reaches up and gently brushes the hair out of my eyes, the movement slow and deliberate. His touch slides against the curve of my forehead and my cheek, brushing against the tip of my ear.
What?
My breath catches.
What are you sorry for?
for not reaching you sooner, he whispers. His touch stops at the soft place under my jaw, where I am certain he can feel the frantic beat of my pulse. His eyes are pools of darkness, even deeper than the one I fell into. I can see myself reflected inside, a speck of light in the dark. Kong's concern draws me in, his touch a promise. He's waiting for my answer, and I give in to the pull, leaning forward to close the distance between us. The lightest brush of my lips against his. He tips my head up and deepens the kiss, until it is a different sort of drowning, until we are forced to draw breath. The tunic falls from my shoulders as he pulls me closer, enveloping me in the warmth of his body. We are both a little breathless when we let go of each other. Thank you, I murmur and try to self-correct. I mean, for saving my life. I'll rescue you 10 times over if I will be kissed like that every time, he declares, making me laugh, chasing away my embarrassment. Ning? His expression changes from amused to serious in an instant, and I know it is a practiced thing to have such control of his emotions. You are the first girl who has ever greeted me with a swift kick to the shins, the first girl who has ever made me feel normal. That is decidedly abnormal, I tell him after a pause, not knowing how else to respond. You asked me before about Liu Zhou. He touches his chest. They marked us with the traitor's brand. When I first arrived, I tried to hide it, but it made me look odd, wearing a tunic when everyone else was bare-chested. Then I realized they all recognized me anyway, so it was easier to stop hiding. It was a long time before they accepted me. I think he understands as I do, how it feels not to belong. Kong leans away from me, running pebbles through his fingers, not meeting my eyes. They respected my father because he fought against the raiders from the mountains. He defended their homeland. And my mother? She was descended from their clans. She was to be betrothed to the emperor. Did you know that? When my father stopped the raiders, he brought her to the capital to be wed to the emperor at my grandmother's request. But the marriage never happened. The general claimed her as his own, I say, repeating what was taught to me in the history lessons. One of the many crimes the Prince of Dai was accused of. Forcing a political marriage for his own gain, driving a wedge between brothers. No, he says sharply. They grew close on the journey from Lizhou to Jia, and she refused to have another. The Dowager Empress acquiesced. In time. But history will always remember my father as the one who stole another's intended. I'm beginning to understand that history is never so simple. Not the story of my parents, not the story of Kong's parents, or the two of us. I quickly bury the thought, knowing it is something dangerous, something I do not dare to imagine. I realize I can turn this into an opportunity to find out more of what the princess has asked me to uncover. Even as the guilt gnaws at me in turn. Do you hate him? The emperor? I don't know, he says hesitantly. He did everything in his power to destroy my family, but he was also a capable ruler in some aspects. He could have executed us all, but instead he sent us into exile, against the recommendations of his own advisors. I'm not sure I would have been able to say something so reasonable about someone who threatened the people I love. I wanted to meet him and see for myself the type of man my uncle was after all these years. He shakes his head. Now I will never get the chance. The people at court, the ones you said were still loyal to your father. I venture forth with more questions. Did they tell you how the emperor died? Kong's head swerves back to look at me, his gaze suddenly sharp. Why does it matter? Careful, Ning. There have been rumors he was poisoned by the shadow.
He waits expectantly, and I decide to tell him in the hopes it will chase away his obvious suspicion. My mother was one of the victims of the poison tea bricks, I explain. That is why I am here, why I need to win the favor of the princess. He considers this, frowning deeply. Finally, he says, My sympathies. I know the sharpness of that pain. My birth mother passed giving birth to me. My birth father was a commander with the Kailang Battalion who died on the battlefield. My adopted mother took me in, ensured that I knew I was wanted, protected me even when there were those in her own household who were offended at my presence. When I lost her, a part of me died as well. He draws me closer again, this time offering only an embrace for warmth and comfort. I rest my head on his shoulder, even though I know I shouldn't be grateful for this fleeting moment. But, he says after a pause, you say your mother's death is related to the favor you want to ask of the princess. Are you looking for vengeance? I would ask for the head of the shadow if I could. I snap, and the vehemence in my voice reminds me of the anger that continues to simmer under the surface. I close my eyes and turn my face away. He has seen too much of my frustrations and my failures. To his credit, Kong does not react to my outburst. He only plays with my hair, running the strands through his fingers. Did you know? He says, his breath stirring my hair. The women of the Emerald Isles are a fierce lot. They know how to fish with a spear and dive for pearls as well as the men. They are just as adept at spear fighting. I doubt my father could have forced my mother into anything. It was said she challenged him to a duel for her hand in marriage. Really? I'm grateful he's sharing a part of himself, offering a distraction for my sadness. I imagine a proud woman, one who is able to bear arms to defend her homeland from invaders, who willingly uprooted her life to marry a man she had never met, but who found another instead. She dared to challenge the general to combat? Laughter makes his shoulders shake. She challenged him to see who could stay underwater the longest. He lost. I laugh too. I think she would have gotten along with my mother. I know she would have. He waits a breath before saying, If she was anything like you. Kong. I straighten again, sitting in front of him so I can see his face. I need you to tell me the truth. You once mentioned that the princess had a stone that can heal all illnesses. Is there really such a thing? When he doesn't reply, I grab hold of his hands so he can feel for himself through the connection that quivers there between us. A pressure builds in my head like water against a dam. All my hopes balanced precariously on the answer. I have to know. He seems taken aback at the force exerted through my grip. I've heard rumors, he says. But, he slowly extracts his hands from mine and places them on my shoulders instead. If such a stone exists, don't you think the Emperor would have used it to save his Empress or the Dowager Empress? That my father would not have stolen it to save my mother's life? That the princess would not have used it to save her father? Do you think all those people would have died if such a thing exists? I hear his words, but also do not. I cannot acknowledge such a terrible truth. That the foolish hope that keeps me in the palace, even through the mockery, the threats, the embarrassments, is a lie. That even if I won each round and finally emerged victorious, Shu may still die in spite of it. Who is it? He regards me with those eyes that continue to see too much. Who do you want to save? My sister, I whisper. My sister is dying. My life with her has always been so entwined, waking and sleeping in the same room. One of my earliest memories was holding her after she was born, and now she may die at my hands. Like our mother before her. The pressure is too much, and it breaks me, unleashing the tears in a torrent. I sob in his arms. A broken, pathetic thing, ruining everything I touch.
Chapter 25. Kung says nothing as he gathers me into his arms, holding me tight. More tears than I imagined I could contain leave me, spilling through my fingers.
If my sister dies, I'll have nothing left,
I tell him through sputtering sobs.
My father is already half gone to his grief, and I don't think I can save him if Shu dies too.
He uses his thumbs to carefully brush the tears off my cheeks, but I push him away. I don't deserve to be comforted by him, and I don't want his pity. How can it be your fault, he asks, if it was the tea that poisoned her? You didn't know?
Because I was the one who poured the tea.
I drag my sleeve furiously across my eyes.
I should have known to look for the poison. I should have seen the signs.
He scoffs at that, and I press my mouth into a thin, burning line. Ning,